We're with Chris Papworth from the Salmar Community Association today. Chris, can you give us a brief history of the Salmar Community Association?
Oh, of course, I'd love to. The association was founded in 1946, and the genesis of the association was to raise money to give something to the veterans of World War II that served from our community here. And to do that, the association opened in 1949 what we now call the Salmar Classic. And they operated that to raise money to build the Memorial Arena. This is the Memorial Arena that's in behind Centinoka Mall. And that was the genesis of the association, was to provide the funding for this Memorial Arena. And for several years, all the way up until 1972, the association was using the profits from the operation of the Salmar Classic to support the Memorial Arena. At that time, 1972, the arena was then handed over to the District of Salmon Arm. And from there, it had its history and continues to have a history, we hope, maybe. It's a little bit of a question mark there with the arena at the moment. But that was the history of the Salmar. Now, in 1997, the decision was made to build a multiplex. The writing at that time was pretty much on the wall that multiplexes were the way of the future. And as far as the cinema business is concerned, single screen cinemas struggle, because you'll have multiple releases. And when a distributor has a big hit movie, or what they think is a big hit movie, they can dictate to us how long we must show that movie. Now, as long as it's packing the seats, it's no big deal. But if it's not being well received by the public, and you have a single screen, that could mean a month of no revenue. So it's really challenging to operate a single screen cinema. So in 1997, what we call the Salmar Grand, a fourplex, modernized, was built. And it has been we still consider it a modern theater. And of course, we've done what we can to keep it current. Interesting tidbit, we were one of the very first theaters in the entire interior of the province to upgrade our projectors to laser projection from bulb projection. We did that before Cineplex did that, well in advance of the big guys. We like to try to keep it as modern as possible, but it is a building that was built in 1997, and that's 27 years old. So there's some upkeep that is required with any building, but as buildings age, the capital costs increase just to maintain that. But we've operated the Grand as our principal venue for a long time and hope to do so for many years in the future.
You mentioned a connection between the Salmar Theater and the Memorial Arena, and that's interesting because they're similar buildings in shape. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if maybe it was built by the same architects, or do you know anything about that?
I don't have an answer for that, no, David, I'm sorry, but you're right. It could be an artifact of the vintage of the buildings, but I do not recall who the original architect was for the Classic or the Memorial Arena. There's definitely some similarities. The Classic is an interesting building in that it has a lot of similarities with a more of a Quonset type structure, which if you look at the back of the building, you can get that. Now, there's been some really creative people over the years that have painted the back of the building that make it look like an old style reel, which is fantastic. It really, I love how that looks. But that structure does mean that there's a lot of roof there. So it's basically all roof. So that can be a bit of a challenge with an older building.
Well, I do remember the Arrogant Worms called it the tube.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And it actually has one of the best sounding rooms in town.
It depends who you ask. I appreciate that, JC. It depends on who you ask. If depending on the use, it either needs a ton of work in order to improve the acoustics, or depending on what you're doing, it has perfect acoustics because it's in the tube. From a movie-going standpoint, it's less than ideal because you don't want that much reflection. You can tell this if you go to the Classic and you're watching something and someone's speaking in the front row and you're in the back row, you can hear every word. So maybe someone is one of your listeners is thinking back to all of the gossiping they were doing when they were sitting on the front row. Yes, everyone in the back of the theater heard every word.
I've experienced that.
You mentioned that. So that could be a bit of a challenge depending on what you're using the building for. In some cases, great. In other cases, it'd be nice to have something to handle the sound reflection off all of the surfaces.
Since we're on the subject of the Salmar Classic, I read recently that it is up for interested parties to take over?
Yeah, that's correct. So we put out a press release. We've, of course, been talking about this. The Classic and how we can best use the Classic has been a topic of discussion since I joined the Salmar board over 10 years ago. And even well before that, as we're trying to see, okay, well, there's a clear trend that the majority of our patrons, meaning the movie-going public, are really more interested in the Grand and the experience there. Now, like we were talking before we went live, you and I were kind of reminiscing of what I've talked to many people over the course of the last several years about what the Classic means to them, and they have fond memories of going to their first date or all of these things, right? And I have those too. I have very fond memories of the Classic. But that's all to say that we've been talking a lot about what to do with the Classic and how best to use this. And so it was suggested to us from another organization that has done a similar approach where they asked for expressions of interest to see if there were others that could potentially use the facility, take over the facility even, and then most likely repurpose it to some other use so that it continues to be used. Now, I have been asked by others, so what are we kind of looking for? I've resisted the urge, as verbose as I can be, I've resisted the urge to put any parameters on what we're looking for. I'm just looking for any and all expressions of interest in what interested parties could do with the Classic. So what does that look like? I don't know. I'm hoping to see some creative, we're all hoping on the board to see some creative ideas come out of that. And so we're starting to get some responses, which is encouraging, and hopefully we'll get many more. We put a long timetable on this, JC. It was more, as if we can go all the way, I think I have it here in front of me, till September 15th. So we've got, because it's a big ask. How are you going to take over a 75-year-old building that has its primary use case is not really tenable much anymore? So what could you do with that space? It requires a lot of thought and reflection, and how are you going to keep up the maintenance costs or replacement costs for various items? And we haven't really put any guidelines other than we'd like to see that you've thought about how you would cover the costs of this. Whatever it ends up that you end up doing with the space, is there even just a few words about how this could be sustainable going forward?
Could that building be designated as a heritage site, or could it potentially be dismantled?
It's a good question, David. I do not believe that it meets the criteria for a heritage site, but someone may correct me on that. We've talked about that at the board level, and we have some on the board who are more knowledgeable on that particular topic than I, and they were also of the opinion it doesn't really meet the criteria for a heritage site. That said, David, we did go through an exercise over the last few years of going through some of the old original equipment, like a very old projector. And in conjunction with the R.J. Haney Society, the two of us have gone together. And it's really, I would put more of the credit on them that they created an exhibit for the history of movie theaters in Salmon Arm. And so we've gone through in a lot of those old more historical items have been donated to the R.J. Haney Society, and they have an exhibit, which I think they have in their archive. And there was no expectation that they'd have this on forever, but they're, from time to time, I'm sure the curators there will decide when it's appropriate to bring out some of those items.
The Salmar Community Association is a nonprofit, correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Yes, we are a nonprofit. So what that means is, though we run a business and we try to run a good business, any additional profit above what our maintenance costs are and paying the staff and the little concessionaires that are just so excited to be working at the theater, we give that back. And so in the past, now, as with the rest of the theater business, coming out of the pandemic has been a slow process that's kind of, well, it's been a little frustrating, JC, because it looks like things are going and going, and then we get hit with a Hollywood strike. And that means no content being produced. The pipelines all get pushed way back, so release dates are pushed. There hasn't been I wouldn't say that it's been a hugely bullish time to be in the exhibition business. And so in the past, though, when I joined the board, my first assignment on the board was to sit on the grants committee. And that was fantastic. We'd have people come in, you know, with projects they were doing, all sorts of things in a broad spectrum of interests and community projects. And we were able to support many of those. In fact, if we go back over the history of the association, over $1 million has been returned by the Salmar Community Association in the form of grants to community interest groups. So and how's that? It's gone, including some fairly sizable ones. I've already mentioned the R.J. Haney Society. Back when they did their Montebello project, which is an amazing rework of that facility, we were able to donate $100,000 as a grant towards that. So in previous times where we had more cash coming in the cash flow, of course, being a nonprofit, we're just turning around and that profit is granted out. So yes, that is it's unusual to have a movie theater that does that. I don't know if listeners are aware of just how unusual that is. Across Canada, we're not unique in that, but it's much less common to go to a movie theater knowing that your popcorn and your pop and your, a small percentage, but a small percentage of your ticket price, because Hollywood takes most of the ticket price. So that is going back into the community in the form of grants. So, and we look forward. So it's been a little challenging over the last few years because we haven't had that kind of excess capital coming out of the pandemic, but we still try to help out where we can. So we'll do passes and, you know, those sorts of things to support, whether it's a children's festival or the Rotarians or raising some funds. Can we provide them with a couple of yearly passes that they can auction off? We do those sorts of things. And we look forward to hopefully in the future going back to supporting via cash grants other projects as they come up.
What were the challenges of the pandemic? Because
huge.
Obviously a theater requires
it's huge.
A crowd.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and first of all, there was we're in a business. If I can just back up a little bit, we're in a business that's a little odd in that we don't control our product. So we rely on Hollywood and other places to provide us with a product that hopefully will resonate with the patrons. During the pandemic, of course, there was most projects were shelved or delayed, and so there wasn't much being released. And then what little was being released was being released directly to streaming services, which are, I would say, our main competitor at the moment in terms of the film exhibition business. It would be your Netflix and your other direct to stream channels. Well, we, of course, if you think of it this way, the reason why I still have an optimistic view of the future for the movie business is because people like to get out and be with others. There's something special about being in a dark theater with a bunch of strangers and experiencing this film all at the same time. I think that it'll be hard to replace that with just watching Netflix in your basement, you know, by yourself or with one or two other people. It's just not the same. There's a social experience with that. Well, obviously, during a pandemic, when all of our social experience had to be shut down for a moment or a time, we didn't have anything coming in, no operations whatsoever. That was exceptionally challenging for us. And then as we were allowed to reopen, that reopening, of course, is going against the grain of what we've become used to, as, you know, we're going to be far apart from one another. And it's a little challenging to go from that back to, hey, everyone, grab your popcorn, sit next to a bunch of strangers eating popcorn. And, you know, it took some time for patrons to become comfortable again. And they by and large have. So when there's a movie that has resonated with the public, they're not shy about coming anymore. Like they'll be happy to come, and it's just a matter of getting that product that resonates. And that's a bit of a challenge right now because of the Hollywood strike that was very prominent last year. A lot of things get pushed back again, and you know, release dates that we're counting on for big popular products, it's, you don't see those as often. So it's been a challenge to weather through this. And I think that we've done remarkably well thanks to the support that we get from the community. And we have a huge amount of support from people that love the Salmar, and they'll come and watch things here rather than driving to Vernon or just watching it at home on a streaming service. And we certainly appreciate that. And we're always conscious of what it costs to take the family out to see a movie. And our, obviously the other problem we've had, which is not unique to us at all, is the huge amount of increase in just inflationary pressures on costs. We saw a very large increase on the commodities that we use for our concession, all the way from candy to the coconut oil that's used for the poppers to everything. Butter, we go through a lot of butter. So there's a lot of pressures there. We have a 30% plus increase in our costs. We have to work with that. You know, we do employ a lot of teenagers. We're the first job for many, which is great. But you know, labor costs being what they are, that's also a bit of a challenge for us. And then a 27-year-old building on top of all of that. So it's a bit of a challenge. But I don't want to give you the impression that I'm down on the movie business. I still think that we collectively like to go out on a Friday night or sometime and go and be in the movies. It's a great outing. And we do our best. We have an excellent manager, Jody Jones. She's really good. And her team are very friendly. Like when you go to the movie theater, you're generally speaking going to have, we hope, a very good experience. And we do our best to keep the sound updated, the picture updated. And I mean, the seats are the number one thing that people are looking at now. They want comfortable seats. And hopefully we can do something in that regard too. But in order to do that, of course, we need to make sure that we're able to be sustainable via the Grand. And so that leads me back to the Classic, where we're really looking for some other party to take over that space and run with it, do something valuable for the community with it.
The crowds are now starting to return.
They are, but it's entirely dependent on whether or not the movie is good. The thinking previously was that you had your summer blockbuster, so people really just wanted to go to the movies at certain months of the year. That's not true. If you have a good movie, it doesn't matter if it's February or August. People will come out. And there appears to be a bit of viewer fatigue when it comes to when Transformers number 9 or, you know, like the umpteenth remake of whatever it is. You know, we just, that's not resonating with viewers anymore. At one time it was, well, if it had a superhero in it, it's going to be a big seller. That's also not true. I think audiences are trying to send the message that we want to see good stories. We want to see new stories, not just a rehashing of the same thing again and again and again. And the reason I say that is because we recently received a report from our manager, Jody Jones, who was at the Show Canada. That's an industry nationwide gathering of the movie business. And that took place in the Maritimes this year. And she came back, and that was in the panels that she was a part of or she was listening to. That was the response from these major players, like from all of the distributors as well. They're getting that message that, you know, the public are not, they're not hanging on bated breath for the next superhero installment. They're looking for more interesting or new stories, new content, not just reused intellectual properties. And I think that there will be a response to that from Hollywood and other areas. We actually have tried showing some Bollywood, some Indian films, and we had people drive up from the lower mainland. Can you believe it? They drove up to see this in Salmon Arm. And they were now, obviously, we're not going to run that for more than a couple of days, but they were overjoyed that we had brought that in. And it actually turned out okay for us to bring it in for just a day or two. We've tried other things too. Anime is very popular with certain demographics, and so we've tried some of that. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I do think there will be a response from the creative types that are making the films that will resonate better. So the Barbie, the Oppenheimer, those kind of films that have a much better following. And there's always the exception to what I'm saying. So I'm sure that when someone out there is listening and saying, yes, but what about this? This was a remake. And there's always going to be exceptions. But by and large, I think that the viewership for movies is still there. Notwithstanding that we all have Netflix, I still think that there's a demand to go and see something on the big screen with the big sound, with a bunch of strangers that hopefully won't be talking and looking at their cell phone through the movie. Enjoy some nice popcorn. And I'm still very encouraged for the future of the SALMAR as an association, but we do need to focus on that grand, because that will be the future of the association going forward. And it requires that we keep on top of it, just like your house. I mean, if you just let it be, you know, it was built in the 70s, it's not going to appreciate in value other than what the land is if it's never been updated. So we want to keep on top of this and have enough that we can still satisfy our underlying mission statement, which is to not just provide an entertainment venue for the community, but to give back to the community. Because that is our mission statement.
How did the idea come up to participate in with simulcasts such as the Live from the Met and Roger Waters?
Great question, yeah.
Live from Prague.
Great question. Salmon Arm is an interesting place. I love Salmon Arm because there's these little niche pockets of interest that they'll gather together, and then they'll do whatever possible to support what they're interested in. And that the Met Opera, at one time there was ballet that was being broadcast, and that was something that we had interest expressed to us from those that are interested in the opera or in ballet or in Alive Waters, right? We'll try to be responsive. What the general manager will do is she'll gauge based on the interest that's being expressed to her on, hey, you know, we really like to see the opera. And then we take a look at and see, well, how many people are willing to come and see the opera? It turns out that in Little Salmon Arm, there's a very loyal following for the opera. Just like there's the Film Society has a very loyal following that is interested in foreign films and indie films and films that don't get a broad release, but still could be of interest. So that's how we got involved with that, is that people were interested, and we did it as a pilot to see, of course, well, how is it going to work? Can we get it from, in the case of the Met Opera, of course, that's, we're getting that through Cineplex, because Cineplex has the licensing for that. And then we can pay Cineplex for the ability to get that link that we can then show for a live opera, and people come out. And so if the pilot is successful in that, people are interested, and in the case of the opera, they're interested, like really interested, we keep doing it. As long as there's interest, we do our best. Now, in the case of ballet, because I know there are some that were very upset and we didn't get ballet, and we haven't had ballet back. And that, unfortunately, is because that relationship that the ballet, I can't remember if it was the Canadian National or one of the ballet, they just weren't doing that. They weren't doing the stream through the theater. If we had the ability, if it was a product that was available, then we obviously look at bringing that back in, especially if there's people like, yeah, I've got 40 friends and we all want to go and see the ballet. Then we try our best to accommodate.
You mentioned the Shoeshop Film Society.
Yes.
How would you describe the significance of that group being part of the SALMAR Classic since, I believe, 1972?
Yes. Yeah. The Film Society, I know they have been an important partner for us. When we launched into this, David, and we were looking at what we could potentially do with the Classic, that was one of the top things that came up. Well, what about the Film Society? How can we accommodate the Film Society? And because we have no interest whatsoever in ending that partnership, that relationship that we've had for such a long period of time. And The answer that came back to us from not only board members that have a lot of experience with this, but also our manager, is that really the grand could be used for the Film Society. There's really nothing that would prevent us from doing that. We are very interested in continuing to have that, because I'll still have people that come up and say, "Oh, the Film Society brought in this film. It was great. You know, it was really good." We want to have those. That we want to have more of those experiences. So it certainly was a major concern for us. And for that reason, we did make sure that that press release was given to them as a priority. So, like, we want to let you know. We also have some tenants there at the Classic building. So we have Lass that's upstairs, and we have a little beautician shop that's right there on the front facing, and then Second Harvest is in the basement. So they were also informed as a priority to let them know what we're looking at. We were careful too, and this was based on recommendations that we received, to stipulate that this call for expression of interest is not intended to be binding. We're looking to see what ideas are out there, and maybe we'll go with one of them, or perhaps we'll go a different direction. But we thought it's pressing enough of an issue that we need to get that press release out and see what comes back. But yes, we're definitely interested in supporting, however we can, the Film Society and their efforts. I think it's very worthwhile.
Would the streams also move over to the...
Yes. Yeah. So the same thing with the Met Opera, those kind of things we can do. We could probably do it better at the Grand, because we have the upgraded sound systems there. We have much better acoustics for those sorts of performances in the Grand than we do in the Classic, and a much better projection system. So I think those that have enjoyed the Met Opera in the past will still continue to enjoy it if those showings move over to the Grand.
How did the Selmar Classic go from being strictly a movie theater to a live performance venue?
Sure.
As well?
Sure. That's another interesting question, because what has happened, and again, your listeners may not be aware of this, when a distributor has a new release, let's say it's a new Disney animated show or something, they'll tell us where we can show that and what times we can show it and for how many weeks we must show it. And what's happened over the course of the last several years is that distributors simply said, if you want a new release, it's going to be in your multiplex. It's going to be in theater one, you know, the stadium seating, or maybe we'll allow, you know, theater two, also stadium seating, but they'll just not give us permission to show new releases at the Classic, because they've looked at the numbers and said, no, if you're going to have a new release. So part of the answer to your question is it's driven by the distributors themselves. They have that kind of control by saying, if you want our film, yes, you can have it, but it is going to be in your newer facility with the newer sound and the new picture. And they have standards they want to maintain. Now, those that are a little more gray-haired like me will remember that when the first Avatar came out, it was not allowed to be shown in Vernon at first, because at that time, the only 3D projector in the valley was at the Classic. And that was significant. So people are actually coming up to see it in the full 3D experience that the director had intended in the Classic. But since then, there's been that I would say that's one of the last, if not the absolute last time that a distributor said, well, you have a multiplex here with a more modernized multiplex, or you have the Classic, you could show it in either place. They don't allow us to do that. So we would be then forced to look at it as a second run. So, if after it's done its main theatrical release, perhaps if it's a popular film, we'll bring it back to that. We tried doing that for a few years, bringing it back to the Classic at a discounted ticket price. But patrons weren't interested. We just didn't see the numbers coming in. The bottoms weren't filling in seats. It just didn't work. And so then we tried a variety of other things, such as, well, let's try like a mini film festival type thing, like an 80s night, or we'll do a Lord of the Rings marathon, or Back to the Future marathon, or whatever it is. Well, we tried those, and there's been some mixed results with that, but nothing that would get us over that hurdle where we'd say, oh, okay, great, now we can afford to deal with, you know, HVAC issues or something like that. No. So because of the structure of the classic where there is that stage, we do have comedy tours that come in. That's been, and we still are getting, we're still accepting bookings for those, of course, and other live events, but there's some competition for that space too. And the problem is that it's not a problem. It's good to have the options available to you, but the Song Sparrow Hall, for example, is a very nice venue for live music. And of course, live music here at the Nexus and other areas that have opened up and are looking for other things. So when we look at it, we say, well, if we're going to commit to the live side of things, that's going to require a significant capital investment to get it up to what would be considered a standard that would be comparable to what could be found elsewhere. And the concern was that if we do that, then what is that? How is that going to allow us to focus on the multiplex, where that's our, I mean, that's over 90% of our business is there, well over 90%. So we really need our manager to be focused on that. That's the long-term sustainability for the association, is that. And we're not really in a position to divide that attention anymore. When the Grand wasn't 27 years old, well, that's a different situation. We're not quite as concerned at the moment, but we have to look ahead now and plan for the future. So that's what happened, is that it was a combination of declining patronage of the classic in favor of the Grand, and the movie distributors themselves saying, you can't have this at the classic. You can have it at the Grand, but you can't have it at the classic. We're not comfortable with that. We don't want it there. And we've even gone and said, well, but here, like we plead our case, we try our best to have them see the light and say, well, there's actually more seats in the classic, and we've got a group that is prepared to buy out the entire theater. They want this there. They'll buy every seat. Would you allow us to do it? And they'll still come back and say no. If they're prepared to buy out every seat, do it at the Grand. And we'll say, well, if there's more seats in the classic, it doesn't matter. So there's some things that are actually pulled out of our hands. Now, a listener, a very interested listener, would say, well, I was reading in the paper that the Town Theater in Vernon got some new releases that they could do right off there, and they're a single screen. I think the difference is there is some comparison there, of course, but the difference is that we do have a multiplex. We do have the Grand. And so because we're the same association between the two venues, it's not exactly analogous to the Town movie theater in Vernon, where that is their only location. We actually do have the two locations. We're just like a little minnow in a big ocean when it comes to the big players in the exhibition business, Landmark and Cineplex and those others, which, as I've mentioned Cineplex before, we don't have an antagonistic relationship with them. We do use the streaming service they offer for the Metropolitan Opera, but we're a little fish, and we want to still have those good relationships that we cultivate through our manager, Jody, and previous managers too, so that we can get things offered. Like there's recently a film that has been promoted on our social media. I think it's called Thelma, and that's not a wide release film, but the reason we were able to get it is certainly an eligible film for us to show, but we were able to get it because of the relationships that our manager has been able to cultivate with these people that can make those decisions for us. So hopefully it's one that'll resonate with audiences, because we're able to get things that aren't available otherwise, or just not as commercial as that some of the other theaters would go with. And because we have a very interested and eclectic taste here in Salmon Arm, that we can still get those and hopefully have them be viable.
How far in advance are you able to book films? What's your monthly schedule?
It's a good question. I think the answer would be it depends. We do have a booking agent that we use. That's normal. And the booking agent helps us to kind of see the roadmap ahead. It depends on the size of the release. But generally speaking, we're planning out a month or two in advance to see. And then trying to remain flexible if something else comes up, surprise hit, sleeper hit, those are great, love those. or if consumers come in and say, like, for example, a little bit of a guilty pleasure for me, but we had a subtitled Godzilla movie, and I just thought that looked awesome. And so I was asking around and say, well, is it even possible that we could even get that? And as a board member, I'm not involved in the day-to-day operations. That's Jody's, that's her bailiwick, and she's very good at it. So, but I just asked, you know, Jody, you know, there's this Godzilla movie, it's subtitled, it's out of Japan. It's, and she brought it in, and you know what? It was fantastic. It was great. There was a lot of people that were there. I was talking to other patrons there. I drugged my poor wife out to watch a subtitled Godzilla movie, and she loved it. It was a great film. And that's, that kind of thing, although we may not get it right on the release week, that can be frustrating to people that are, why aren't we having this right on? We only have the four screens. And so we have to make some decisions. Those that love horror movies really love horror movies, but they don't come out and see them on release anyway. So we have to make some decisions as to what our customers have been telling us, voting with their dollars. And we try to be responsive to that.
Earlier, we touched a little bit upon the nostalgia aspect of a movie theater. Mm-hmm. Many people that live in Salmon Arm will recall, and perhaps some people are unaware, that Salmon Arm used to have a drive-in theater.
Yes.
And there is still one in Enderby.
Yes.
What's your take on the state of drive-in theaters in this day and age?
Well, I think there's a space for it. It is a seasonal business, so it really is just in the summer months. It's a smart thing to have. I think they have a good location in Enderby for it because it's right on Highway 97. So I think visibility-wise, that's good. But being a niche product like that, I would say that there's a limited amount of appetite for it. So I don't think you'll see a sudden resurgence of drive-in theaters coming in being built all over the place. I'm happy that it's working for them, and I think it's a great offering that they have. It is kind of a niche appeal, I would say, David, but it's a fun thing. If you've never experienced a drive-in movie, it's cool. Like, I grew up and there were multiple drive-in theaters when I was growing up, and I remember going to see Star Wars in the drive-in theater, or Back to the Future, one of the first ones in the drive-in theater. It was great. But because it's a seasonal business, it makes it really tough. In areas like ours where tourism is important, so I think it does work in Enderby as a seasonal thing. Having that as a business model, I think it's a challenging business model, the drive-in theater. But I wish them all the best, because I think it is kind of cool to have a drive-in theater. The nostalgia is real.
Whatever happened to the double feature?
So, you know what happened? In my take, and this is just me, I'm not speaking on behalf of the association or anything, but just my take, is that movies are too long. Hmm. So, like, there used to be an average runtime for a film would be somewhere around 90 minutes. That's not the average anymore. Like, an hour and a half is considered to be kind of a shorter film. We now have movies, major release movies, that are upwards of 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And that makes a double feature really tricky, because you're really pushing the envelope, right? Now, when you say double feature, are you talking about the late shows, or just the idea of you pay for this and then right after this one we'll show you a different movie?
That's right. There'd be two movies.
Two movies at the same screen. So the multiplexes kind of fix that a little bit, because when you have a single screen, that's the only option, is to switch the movie for the late show. When you have more than one screen, of course, and you can just run concurrently all of the shows that are out, or the ones that are hopefully going to bring people in, all at the same time. Now, sometimes people will ask us this, and I'm anticipating maybe a question that you never intended to ask, but since you put a microphone in front of me, I'll just say it. They sometimes get questions about late shows. Like, well, why aren't we running a late show? Well, there's a couple challenges with late shows in our little community. First of all, aside from maybe a Friday night, maybe Saturday's iffy, but there's just not enough people that come out for a late show for us to be able to keep the lights on and not lose funds doing it. The other issue that we have is these super long run movies means that we have to keep staff on for a long period of time. And staffing costs are quite high. Like, that's our highest expense. So it does the economics of running late shows is really, really questionable. Now, if you had a movie like, I don't know, more of an R-rated movie or something for an adult audience, and it was popular, well, then, yeah, a late show makes sense because they're more likely to attend in numbers that it would make sense for us to do that. So we had a few last year where that did make sense, but it's not something that if you're just running a late show every night of the week or even every weekend, depending on the movie lineup, the theater's just empty for 3 hours. But with us showing a movie to an empty room or one or two patrons, and I appreciate those patrons as individuals for coming to support us, but I need another 40 of them or 50 of them in order for it to be economically viable. But so that's why sometimes people ask, and I remember going to late shows. I like late shows, but with a 3 hour movie and a late show starting at nine,
That's pretty late.
So hopefully editors will take the reins a little bit and say, no, you can't just have 3 hour movies all the time. Let's kind of cut that back a little bit. 2 hours is still lots, like maybe even a little less than that.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on some of the details of your press release?
We did just say in this press release that we're looking for what we call expressions of interest for other parties prepared to use the classic building for their own purposes. And here, there are some criteria we did provide. David, we did say that the expressions of interest should be written down. They should have a general description of the proposed use of the facility, commentary regarding financial viability, what's going to be the plan going forward, and considerations for the ongoing maintenance of the building, since the building is it's a senior citizen, it's 75 years old. And, certainly with those that are nonprofit groups that are interested, they may want to consider possible financial grants from other parties. We certainly have been a recipient of some Film Canada grants. Those have been very helpful for us. And we do use those, but it's a little more challenging for us to access grant money, since we do have the grand, and in a good year, the grand does well in a good year. So that precludes us from some programs that may be available to others. So I would just point out, we did have a press release. It has been widely circulated. If for some reason someone is interested and they don't have the request for expressions of interest, then they can reach out to our manager, and that can be provided to them. It's just a one-page press release, but on that is the email that we're using to collect the expressions of interest, which is submissions@salmartheater.com. And if anyone wants that, of course, and your listeners are certainly welcome to send inquiries to that, submissions@salmartheater.com.
The Salmar Association provides grants to other mm-hmm. nonprofits. Yes. For a group that wants to apply for a grant, how do they do that?
Oh, that's, yeah, great question. If they're applying for grants, now I would just, a brief caveat at the moment, we're still facing a roof replacement. So please temper expectations in terms of cash awards at this point. Hopefully that'll change in the future. But if they're looking for some kind of in-kind support, whether that be movie passes for an event, they can contact our manager, Jody Jones, with their request. And she has an email as well they can use. They can just send that to manager@salmartheater.com.
Why does the Salmar Community Association feel that it's important to preserve the Salmar Classic?
That is why this has taken so long for us to, because we've been trying other things to try to make this work mm-hmm. and make it work for the long run. And we've been going through that a long time. And there's been, I would say, a concerted effort by multiple boards over many years to try to think of creative ways to use that space. But now, looking forward, we can see that our efforts as an association are best focused on, that core business of the grant. And let someone else take the baton, run with it, do something creative with the space, perhaps, and then there'll be other reasons why that space will be used or not used. And there, it is entirely possible that just no one will have a long-term plan for the space, in which case we'll have to go back to the drawing board and see what else we can do. But certainly our intent is clearly to concentrate where we feel it's the most benefit for the association long run. I'm trying to infer also that that will allow us then to continue our core mission of giving back to the community and providing a top-notch entertainment venue for Little Salmon Arm. You know, it's a city of less than 20,000, and we want to have something that's really, really nice for the community to use. I would say that when it comes to preservation efforts, as I said on the onset, I'm not prepared to commit to anything. So it is entirely possible that someone will say, you know what, we really just need that space because we have a plan that we're going to build something new that is more suitable for what we need and right there. And David, that may be the venue that's taken. So we're not really committing to the preservation aspect of it, other than it'd be nice to see it used well. And that would be great. I'm sometimes accused of this, but we're actually not just looking for just a big fat check and then bulldoze it and build a parkade. We're really more interested in, hey, could this give some group the leg up they need to make a viable project that was perhaps marginal at best, but now with a venue, it becomes perhaps viable. And we are getting some ideas from others that are starting to write their submissions and send them in.
And by doing so, remain a part of community building.
Yeah.
In Salmon Arm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We live here. We're community minded, I would say, but also with the thought that being community minded, we also have to keep our eye on the bottom line and what does it look like in a very challenging, perhaps the most challenging box office results over the last 4 years than we've had in decades and decades. So it's a challenging time, and those kind of challenging times that cause us to refocus so that we can last through the next challenging time, and not just last, but exceed expectations, keep things updated, and return all our profit to the community.
Chris, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Yes, I do have one thing I'd like to add. Thank you for asking, JC. I would just like to thank the community on behalf of the Salmar for all of the support that the community does give. We really do appreciate seeing people come to the movies here. And we love operating the theater. We look forward to operating the Salmar Theater for a long time to come. And that's only possible because our friends and neighbors, our fellow citizens, are prepared to come to the movie. So thank you so much for those of you that go and see a movie, buy popcorn and enjoy a candy or two. Thank you very much for doing that. We would not be in the position that we're in now without the support that we get from the community. So just a heartfelt thanks for all of the support that the Salmar gets.
Well, thank you for coming in, Chris.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, David.